Hello, and welcome to Back in Control Radio with Dr. David Hanscom.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Back in Control Radio with Dr. David Hanscom. I'm your host, Tom Masters, and our guest today is Lisa Goodpaster. She's a childhood trauma educator, a motivational speaker, and founder of the Stephood Project. She is also the author of Alienated: When Parents Won't Parent. She helps families and professionals understand the complex issues that arise in all families and has a unique ability to connect and inspire all who are struggling to understand children who have been alienated. Welcome.
Thank you, Tom. I'd like to introduce Lisa Goodpaster, who I met through Zoom and whatever on around 2021. And she's had quite a story. She just wrote a book called Alienated: When Parents Won't Parent. And she has quite a story to tell. She was alienated from both her mother and father by her stepmother, which unfortunately is a very common problem. Her ability to connect and inspire while creating a safe space for all who are struggling to understand children who have been alienated is unmatched. She's a motivational speaker, helping families and professionals alike understand complex issues that arise within families. And she's just got a very excellent background. She's very energetic, very passionate about what she does. And interesting enough for me that I've been doing chronic pain work for many years, but the last 3 years of my practice, I realized that the family is actually the biggest factor keeping people in pain. So people get better on their own, go back to their families, get pulled right back into the hole. And so we spent the last couple of years creating a structure around the family. So as powerful as the family is about keeping people in the hole, it's also equally as powerful pulling people out of the hole. So Lisa, welcome to the show today. And we're excited. I haven't talked to you for a while in general, so I'm excited to catch up in general. But anyway, welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's so good to be back and be able to talk about the book and how to help everyone else that's suffering.
So let's start a little bit with the book, Alienated. Just give us a taste of your background. And she lays it out in the book very intensely. It's quite an interesting read. So how did the book reflects a pretty tough childhood. Can you give us a sort of synopsis of what it's like in your childhood, being a kid and all these factors coming at you?
Sure. Like every former child of divorce, I thought my childhood was normal. I thought it sucked internally on the inside, but I just felt like my childhood was like everyone else's. We all kind of silently, suffer in silence. I felt very alone, very confused. And I was always internally frustrated, always felt stuck. And that stayed with me, that I felt a lot of anger, but I held it on the inside.
But now, how old were you when your parents divorced?
I was 4 when my parents divorced.
Okay.
And I was 7 when they both remarried.
Remarried.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And so I have very, very little memories of my mom and dad and I together.
And do you have siblings?
I have siblings. Yes. The world refers to them as half. To me, they're whole because I'm the oldest. So I watched them all, get born into the world.
Okay.
And so in my case, I was just a typical, from the outside, I just looked like a typical kid for divorce. Both my parents seemed to have the same goals for me, but just different methods. And their parenting styles collided. And so as a little kid, for me, that was, looking back, way too much adult stuff for me. Way too much,
No, this is before the divorce.
This was after the divorce, between 4 and 7. So as parents are trying to move on with their lives, the kids are kind of, they're waiting for them to move on with their lives. And the kids are kind of, we're watching everything. We're watching our mom's reactions, our dad's reactions, just everything. That's such an important age. So for me, I always, in my mind, I always had a really close relationship with my dad. And I still do. However, as a little 7-year-old, we don't know what healthy relationships are supposed to be with our parents because we're little.
Right.
So, yeah, my childhood was very much like a latchkey Gen X childhood. Parents that, they loved me the best that they could. It's just there were things that happened, and in order to survive, I stayed silent.
Well, you bring up a very interesting point in that you have two parents, both parents divorced, both parents remarried, but there's that in between no man's land where you don't know where things are going to go. And the number one factor people seek in life is feeling safe. And so if there's always a moving target back and forth, changing different relationships, different jobs, et cetera, you don't feel safe. So when between 4 and 7, how did that, well, two things, what did it feel like and how did it play out as far as your behaviors and how life went for you at that age?
Oh, David, it was what I know now was high octane anxiety.
Okay.
Back then, I didn't know. So
No. Why do you say that? Because anxiety is pretty intense. You just thought it was normal.
I thought it was normal. Because I can even remember if my dad would call and I was with my mom would have like a frustrated like, oh, he's calling, like this is our time type of feeling. And instantly I would feel very anxious on the inside, very not safe. I never felt safe and I didn't realize it. I felt safe like with my grandparents when I was in big crowds with my family, but I never felt safe with my parents.
Did you have like just the sensation of anxiety? Did you have heart racing heart,
Yes.
sweaty, couldn't sleep? And what were some of the symptoms you had?
I had like racing heart rate, always racing. I used to see stars. Like you see those little stars when you're, like almost like you're gonna pass out, but you're not. It's like you move too fast. I would always feel like I was outside of my body, but I didn't realize. It was my normal.
What I'm finding out in my work right now, I've worked in chronic physical pain for a lot of time, but over the last 5 years, it's become readily apparent that the mental pain in the form of ruminating repetitive thoughts is a big problem. And the data shows that 90% of children 8 years old and under have ruminations, and 27% of those kids have really invasive thoughts. They really torture people. Was that an issue with you, the racing of, I call them ruts, repetitive unpleasant thoughts?
As a teenager, yes, but between under 10, what I think maybe people would refer to it as disassociation.
Okay.
I would imagine a better life. I would imagine I was imaginative. I would pretend, I would just play, but not like, but by myself, I don't recall really ruminating. Other than, I mean, as an adult, yeah. But as a kid, it was more, I felt more like I was like, I would go off and I would just, if I didn't like where I was at, I would just imagine, or I would play music.
So a lot of daydreaming then.
Yeah, I would say daydreaming, definitely. Way better word. Yes, daydreaming.
You know, you bring up a point that I don't talk about very much, but I also remember I had a horrendous childhood also, but
Right.
probably between ages 8 and 14, it was a huge amount of daydreaming. You sort of escape into a different world, right?
Yeah,
And it
definitely.
works to some degree. I
Yeah,
mean,
yes.
interesting.
Yeah.
So let's jump ahead. So again, the basic thing, people forget this. So parents tell kids, you know, do this, this, and this, you'll be successful here, here, and here. But I think the only thing that kids need is to feel safe. That's it. Doesn't matter what you do or don't do, it's really just about feeling safe and nurtured. It sounds like that you didn't have very much of that.
No, I did. I didn't because I didn't. By the time I was seven, an eight, about eight, and I went to live. I went to jump in the car. I went to live with my dad. It was supposed to be for a week, and it turned into like 5 years of hell. And because I was a kid, I didn't understand that. Okay, my mom was, in my case, the stricter parent, because she was more about stability and doing your homework and rules. And my dad was complete, have fun, be free. And so I always chose my dad. And the weird thing was, I didn't feel my dad, I felt like I had to protect my dad.
So it sounds like your stepmother was difficult.
She was very covert, very judgmental and jealous.
Okay.
And so,
I'm also finding out that's a really common problem also. I won't go into details, but okay, so you're your father's daughter. Why should she be jealous? It doesn't make, I mean, it happens all the time, but it just doesn't make any sense to me.
right, because with the work that I've done and the people that I've talked to, and you see this commonly, and it's apparently, it has to do with jealousy, but it's a threat for a woman because no one, she wants her own family. She wants her own children with her own person. And I was a reminder that my dad had a past. And so her delusions and her lack of integrity on the inside without, maybe she should seek help. Maybe talk to my mom, like, hey, I don't really want to watch your daughter. But my parents had no idea. Nobody would have understood the
So was your
complexity.
stepmother, she criticized you a lot?
Yeah, she criticized my parents. She criticized me. And when she first did, I can remember being, seven, eight, and feeling like it felt like a bully. Like what's like that doesn't feel good on the inside, but I didn't have the communication skills to say, hey, mom, dad, I don't like how this person is talking about you or my dad.
But you didn't feel safe going to your mother or father about this? No.
No, and oftentimes she would talk this way in front of my dad. And so when my dad, I think he would stick up for me. He would try to do his he would want to ignore it or this isn't the time or and it was just it would always get pushed back to me. So the way that I look at it now, she had to portray me as an evil stepchild to make herself feel better.
Yeah, there's a term for that called gaslighting. I'm sure you're familiar with that term. And so you keep being told things about yourself that just aren't true. Like you always do this, you always do this, you're this, this, and this. So you get labeled, and that's called gaslighting, and it's absolutely deadly. So let's jump ahead to middle to late teenage years, which I'm guessing weren't so great.
Oh, they were well, now looking back now, it's like, well, they weren't great, but I think I did a great job as far as surviving, as far as tolerating what I had to tolerate. By the time I was 13, 14, I was so internally angry. My parents had no control over, I didn't want to be anything like them. I was rebelling. I was angry and I was a rebel and I couldn't explain why. And I thought it was just normal. I mean, we're talking, baby boomers, the 80s, kids were silenced. It just, all of my friends, I mean, we all seemed to have similar situations. So I just kept thinking, one day I'm going to get out of here. One day I'm going to get out of here.
So, what were some of the mental symptoms and physical symptoms that played out during that point of time or behaviors? What was it like being in that spot?
Oh God. It was dark. It felt like I was oppressed. It felt like I had no voice, physical symptoms.
What kind of physical symptoms did you have?
As a teenager, I was super reactive. The minute someone would say anything, it was like venom would just fly out of my mouth. I was protecting myself. I
Right.
had to protect myself from everybody and everything. And I honestly, I mean, I don't mean to make light of it, but I would have to, like, I was always trying to figure out life, was trying to figure myself out. So I honestly thought, oh, I'm this way because I'm a Scorpio. And you read all the things about what a Scorpio, and I would like, oh, that's me, or oh, well, I'm Latina. We're always passionate. So I was always trying to make sense of my own feelings and behavior. So I was always trying, but always feeling like I was misunderstood.
Right.
And that was hard.
Did you find any haven of safety during that period of
Yes.
time?
Yes. Throughout my entire life. And I think that's what made the big difference with I had grandparents, I had aunts
Okay.
and uncles, and I wasn't alienated from them. And that, I think it was a battle. It was between a battle, honestly, between dark and light. So when I was with my grandparents and my cousins, I would just like ignore, like eventually I was always mindful of like the time, okay, I have this much time left before I have to go back.
Did you have, what were your friends like? Same situation, or did you feel safe with your friends, or not so safe?
I felt safe with my friends. By the
You did.
time I got to high school, I had made really good friends. And the funny thing is, most of my friends had intact families. So there was a
Okay.
safety around that. So
Nice.
I was never around. I was always at friends' house. I mean, to the point where my friends, we're still friends now. And they're like, remember, our dad wanted to write you off on our taxes because I was always there. So yeah, I had, luckily, I had really good friends.
And what were your anxiety levels back like back then?
I wouldn't even known if it was anxiety because I was so used to just always super hyper vigilant, super hyper vigilant. Smells. I could like there was a running joke because nobody knew back then. There was like, oh gosh, Lisa can smell anything. Smells. My senses were just like always like at a peak. I never felt. Like I could just, when you're home, you want to just like lay down and cuddle and watch TV and just be safe with your family, with your parents, I assume. With me, it was always like, uh-oh, they're home now. I always felt like I was doing something wrong. Like I would check, like, did I do anything wrong? Honest to God, I always felt like I was like a prisoner in my own little self.
So it sounds like what's a little bit disturbing, or a lot disturbing actually, is that you felt incredibly unsafe around your parents and step parents. Then you felt incredibly, so you know what safety was because your friends, families, and your other relatives felt safe. So the contrast couldn't have been great. That might have made things worse a little bit, but at least you had a spot in your brain that said, this is safe. And so again, humans want to feel safe. So I know. What happens also, which is a bummer, it also tends to play out in your new relationships because you have familiar patterns and you end up being with people who exhibit familiar patterns, even though you don't recognize that initially. And I know you went through some tough marital issues also. Is that correct?
So,
Right. And I don't remember, did you do the Hoffman process? Is that one of our connections? Okay. So we know, okay. Do you want to explain that just about three sentences? It's a little complicated, but your family programming just plays out the rest of your life and your future relationships until you recognize the patterns. It's pretty hard to change them. Can you describe the Hoffman? Well, how old were you when you went to Hoffman?
I was, let's see, 2017. I'm just, I think I was 47.
Okay. So let's get back to Hoffman in a second. But family patterns flat out play out in your future relationships. And what Hoffman taught me is you're always attracted to your darkest patterns because they're the most familiar. They come in different packages, but that's what happens. And so anyway, so how old were you when the lights started to come on. So it was, I realized you went through two marriages that probably played out somewhat like your childhood. So when were you able to start feeling safer, or when did things start to turn around for you?
When I, after I graduated from high school, I got pregnant, got married, and moved to Hawaii. So at, when I got away from family, it was having my son, being a mom,
Okay.
believe it or not, that was like everything that I hated, I just pushed down. I just,
Okay.
you know, it's like now I have a purpose.
Right.
And I, because I hated what was happening to me as a child, as a teen throughout my life, I remember specifically thinking, I am never going to do this to my child if I ever become a parent. So I rebelled so bad away from what happened to me. However, when we rebel, we pick up a lot more patterns
Right.
and behavior.
Right.
So how this plays out, how it played out was that I was a great mom, was not ready to be a wife at all.
Right.
And so my first marriage, and we're still close. We've raised our son great. My son's 31 now. You know, looking back, I wish I would have known. I wish I would have known, but you know, he, I mean, we both were very young. But I would say after that divorce, I became a flight attendant. And that
Okay.
was really good because I got away, I got to travel, and I met my second husband. And we were married for over 20 years.
Okay.
He was the first person I can honestly say that I felt safe with.
Oh, good.
I felt safe. He was very nurturing. And we kind of joke about it now, but it was like, Lisa, you married your mom and your dad. I'm like, no, I didn't. But in a way, he would, that relationship was, I'm very grateful for it.
Oh, good. So when we met back around 2021, were you having chronic pain, or was it mental pain, physical pain, or what was it? What was the, how do we end up connecting?
Well, I had pain. I had so I had, oh my gosh, I had rashes to joint pain, just numbing. My fingertips would get numb. Gosh, there was an amount of the mental pain. I still didn't know what happened. So your audience knows I had a severe cycling accident. And that
I'm
I
sorry,
had
see, it is cycling.
cycling, road
Okay.
cycling. Yeah. And what happened was I broke my neck in that accident and I didn't know. It must have been a small fracture. And when I started hanging out with my family, and as you said earlier, like when we go back into family, those pain circuits, they
Mark.
kind of re they reawaken. And I'm around my stepmom. I didn't know that I had been alienated, that all of that stuff that's in the book, I didn't know. And I'm not kidding. I was having panic attacks and didn't really understand it was a panic attack. And I'm
Right.
still in my 40s. And like rashes, libido, it's called libido radiculitis. It's like a vascular, like all this splotching was happening all over my body.
Right.
And because of my age, everybody assumed it was menopause. And I asked my stepmom, I said, can you help me? I don't feel good. And she actually came in the room with me, and my body is on fire on the inside. And a couple months later, I found the proof and realized, okay, this is what's going on. Because there's a lot of stuff to unpack with this, but the pain, it was like my body was warning me that this lady that has been in your life for 40 years is not helpful to you,
And
Lisa.
how long did that phase last for, this sort of generalized pain and misery?
Till after the Hoffman. It went away about 2 weeks after the Hoffman.
Okay, so
Once.
that was 2017, you said? Okay. So I want to unpack something just for a second. I'll ask you to comment on it. Is that, I had skin rashes, my scalp itched, my feet burned, I had panic attacks, all this sort of stuff. And I, you know, I'm a traditional physician, so I couldn't get anybody to tell me what was going on. And so they keep saying, well, psychological. Well, guess what? It's actually your body's physiology, your chemistry. Skin rashes don't just show up. There's something causes them. They call mast cells. They get fired up from your fight or flight response and they fire up. And so panic attacks is your body's so anxiety is just a sensation generated by stress physiology. Your adrenaline, cortisol, cytokines, you know, all this stuff fires up. Your brain itself gets inflamed. Half your brain is the immune system, and that gets inflamed. So have you heard this term called medically unexplained symptoms, MUS?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, it's a common term started in the family practice literature in 2002 called medically unexplained symptoms. So you go to a doctor, I'm guessing they said you had urticaria. Have you heard that before?
It sounds familiar. Uh-huh.
Anyway, you just have these rashes, but nobody knows what's going on. So I'm going to say they're going to make up these diagnoses, but the bottom line is you're in stress chemistry, stress physiology. And so I had skin rashes all over my body. I get all sorts of creams and ointments and stuff. And when I came out of my plunge, every one of my symptoms disappeared, including all of those things. And I'm guessing you've gone through the same thing.
Yeah, it was very The difference was, as a kid, I didn't have the rashes, but the feelings, the stress response was the same. It was just now I'm in my adult body.
Right. Mm-hmm. So just to clarify for the audience, I know you already know this, but anxiety is just a sensation generated when you're in fight or flight. If a dog comes running at you, you feel anxious. So it's a description of a physiological state. It is not psychological. It is not. And the problem is if you treat this physiological response psychologically, this survival response is 1 million times stronger than your conscious brain, 1 million to 1. So I don't want to get too much into this because I really want to hear more of your story. So what I'd like to just, we can summarize this first part of the podcast in that you had a lot of mental, physical distress as a child. It carried on into your adult life. And we'll talk about Hoffman when we get back. But what I'd just like to make sure this podcast gets out there to, you're now doing pretty well or doing very well. Big contrast.
Yes.
And we'll talk about the Hoffman process when we get back. But what are some things you learned about healing out of this process?
One, that it's possible.
Right.
Two, that I had to understand my body. And it helped to know actually what happened to me. Not understanding it would have been really difficult.
Right. The why is important.
The why was very important.
Right.
Also, support from my parents, the truth, to get my parents the validation instead of they didn't know. So when we talk about families, a lot of families, you know, because of their own programming and patterns, it's hard for them to see their angry child as, no, you're just angry. There's something wrong with you. So what was really helpful was both my parents understanding, owning, and it actually opened up my heart for them as well. So it was very healing. So that was probably the most significant force, was that genuine, authentic love from your parents. They really did love me. They never right. would have allowed this had they known.
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, no, I, people do the best they can do with what they have. That's all you can expect. And if they don't have the tools, they're doing the best they can do. That, but you know, those problems should get passed to their kids. And so anyway, well, we're going to talk more about what you're doing now, but I will, you know, I work with the school systems and stuff a bit. And, you know, these parents want their kids to be less stressed. Well, my point's been for a long time, and it's not totally popular. If you want to solve your kids' problems, you cannot be less stressed than your parents. The way you help your kids is you learn the tools yourself and help them feel safe. When anybody's angry, nobody feels safe. You don't feel safe. The people that are angry don't feel safe. It's a bi-directional process. So feeling safe is healing. And anger is destructive, and nobody feels safe. So anyway, so can I'd like to finish up. Can you tell us about your book a little bit and what you offer as services?
Sure. So my book, Alienated When Parents Won't Parent, is really it's helping parents become better parents. It is my true story that I was basically, alienated, brainwashed to not love or like my parents. And I know that's like, how could that happen? It happens a lot. And so what I'm doing is spreading awareness and also trying to empower and bring kids back to let them know it's okay to have a safe relationship with our parents, especially when you have parents that are that want that are willing to do what it takes. And right now our families are in peril. I mean,
Yeah, in a big
it's
way.
in a huge way. And so I'm just trying to bring awareness and really talk about the importance of our parent and child attachment. And that is the foundation. And also what's really good for everyone to know is when you have both parties, the child, whatever their age is at, and the parent, and they're willing to meet, healing happens, new beginnings happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
So
that's
you have a
amazing.
book called that's called Alienated When Parents Won't Parent. Then you have the stepwoodproject.org. Is that, do you offer services through that?
Yes. So right now I am working with the audience can click the link, but it's called Hope in Darkness.
I'm sorry, what's
And
it called?
Hope in Darkness. Hope
Cope.
in Darkness.
Okay.
Hope in Darkness. Yes.
Okay.
And what we're doing is we work with families that are going through what I went through, high conflict divorces, and the kids are not able to see their parents for whatever reason. So we are helping unite and bring families together through education and programs that are offered.
Okay. And you may access at the stepwoodproject.org. Is that where you are accessed at? Okay. Well, Lisa, thank you very much. I know we're just barely touching the tip of the iceberg with your story, but I think the message I would like the audience to have is hope. I mean, what we have found out that chronic mental and physical illness result from sustained stress, and healing occurs in safety. And there's nothing you have to do. You have to, it's called, I call it deep healing, where your body and safety physiology actually regenerates and heals. And sustained stress just breaks it down. So there's a bunch of strategies to increase your time in safety and decrease your time in threat. They're both necessary every day. So you just learn how to navigate life more easily, and your body really heals at a level you cannot imagine. So anyway, Lisa, thank you. And I'm anxious to find out your new projects on the next podcast. And we appreciate you spending some time today.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank our guest, Lisa Goodpaster, for being on the show today and sharing her experience of being alienated from her parents by her stepmother, how she healed, and the insights she gained. I'm your host, Tom Masters, reminding you to be back next week for another episode of Back in Control Radio with Dr. David Hanscom. And in the meantime, be sure to visit the website at www.backincontrol.com.
Thanks for listening today, and join us next week for Back in Control Radio.